Coming up on the program, OB is going to join us. Talk about the Bears. Yeah, OB for oh boy. There are breaking developments happening in terms of U.S. government reaction to this crazy thing that's happening in Syria. And we all know that, except for Gary Johnson, the guy who wants to be president, that Aleppo is this incredible human rights catastrophe in Syria. And that there was a ceasefire designed last week in order to be able to get emergency supplies in. And a U.N. convoy was hit. And there have been now traded charges between Syrian forces, Russian forces who are on the same side, and our forces and the rebel forces, and who's responsible for that. The U.S. government has said very clearly that they are certain that it was Russian artillery that hit, Russian munitions, I should say, that hit that convoy, that U.N. convoy, which killed a number of people who were, you know, trying to help. And not to mention the supplies that were lost that were going into this. And now there's talk about whether or not this should be brought up to the United Nations as a war crime. And then the Russians, you know, Trump's guys, are turning it back around on us, Congressman, and saying, hey, no, that was you guys. You guys had a drone in the area. You're the ones who did it.
Yeah. You know, I've never seen a drone that's able to take out an entire convoy, by the way. I think that's an important point. Because, you know, these drones, they may carry a couple of Hellfires, but they're not able to basically do close air support and destroy an entire convoy of things.
Right, so, this convoy was a number of vehicles long.
Yeah, and there's 20 UN, at least the last I heard, 20 UN volunteers or workers that were killed in this. I mean, this is absolutely a war crime. I mean, and look, we didn't do it, okay? So let's be very clear about that. The second thing, though, is we know that it was Russian munitions. Now, maybe somebody in our government knows if it was a Russian jet or, you know, a Russian pilot in the jet or a Syrian
helicopter
pilot.
Or something, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know that answer, but this is, and it was completely intentional. I mean, here's what Vladimir Putin does. He does outlandish stuff like this because he knows he can get away with it, and then he denies any involvement because he doesn't need the world to know he does it. He just needs Barack Obama and the West to know that he's willing to do it. And he thinks, and you know, up to now correctly, that no matter what he does, whether it's annex Crimea, whether it's invade Georgia, whether it's invade Ukraine, whether it's, you know, any of these tragedies in Syria. By the way, they've blown up more hospitals than we even know how to count. You know, we blow up one accidentally in Afghanistan, and there's a full accounting for it, and people are punished. So it's a very big difference. So I think it's absolutely a war crime, and I think, you know, we need to go from talking tough and being dismayed to at least beginning some humanitarian no-fly areas, and the Turks have actually started doing that along their border.
Some rescue workers actually described these airstrikes as some of the worst Aleppo has seen in years, and that's really saying something. As you said, the hospitals being bombed, they said food supplies, medical supplies are absent in some areas. They don't have enough to treat, and the 2 million people don't have access to water right now in that area. It totally is a humanitarian disaster. But when you think about it, Russia, Putin, what is it, just the show of power? Is that what would motivate something like this, or how did it get here?
Well, the other thing to keep in mind, too, is there's reports that they've been using bunker-busting bombs to penetrate underground because they know that people hide underground during air raids. So they're obviously going after civilians.
Jeez.
The reason is simple. You know, Vladimir Putin has his first role in the Middle East he's had in, you know, 20, 30 years. He is seen as the powerful one there. He's doing everything he can with Iran. By the way, anybody that aligns themselves with Bashar al-Assad, even rhetorically, or with Russia in this, is aligning themselves with Hezbollah and Iran because they're all on the same side of history on this. And the point is, you know, they believe differently than we do. We believe in precision attacks against military areas. And when civilians die, it's a tragedy and it's collateral damage, and it's something we work very hard to avoid. They believe, and the regime of Syria believes, that the more pain you inflict on people, and by the way, killing a child, killing a woman, killing an innocent civilian inflicts more pain than killing a soldier. The more collective pain you impose, then the more likely you are to win. And this goes back to Assad's father that, you know, leveled a town of 50,000 people and built a giant statue to himself because they dared rise up and rebel against him. So this is, look, Putin is a bad man. Russia is a very bad regime. And Assad is even worse. And so it's time to go from talking tough to starting to do some actions.
Okay, so that brings us to tonight, and that brings us to the overarching issue here. Let's stay with foreign policy here. It's very unclear what the real relationship with Russia is and Donald Trump for a number of reasons. He won't tell us if he's doing business there. We know he's done some business there. We don't know how extensive it is. That's one of the reasons it is speculated he doesn't want people to see his tax returns, because there will be an indication of the assets that he has that are providing income for him, and how they are connected to Russia. Or are they not? Is he offshoring? That's another issue as well. But what do we know about how interested Russia is in monkeying with this election here?
Well, look at a couple of things. Number one, the hacks of the DNC, can be traced to Russian players, most likely. What would be the reason to hack the DNC and then release information to embarrass the Democrats? And, look, I'm no Democrat, no fan of them, but I also am a bigger not fan of, any outside government like Russia does in Eastern Europe or in some of its old satellite states, really getting involved. And that's why I think, frankly, when there's a hack of different people's emails and things, that shouldn't be. And I get that the media has to cover it, but I think we need to come to an agreement eventually that we're not going to allow foreign players to do stuff like that. But you look at the connections, and this is my big concern with Donald Trump. And this is why I've been so hesitant to be able to support him, is partially because of this Russia thing. And, the Paul Manafort issue, initially Paul Manafort said he had nothing to do with changing the Republican platform to eliminate giving offensive weapons to Ukraine. That was a big deal. We find out that Manafort has a lot of these deep connections to the Russians. Manafort leaves, and that's good. I'm glad he did. And I don't think Trump's new people have these connections. But there is an outstanding question about, the affection of Putin from Trump, and I think that needs to be answered. Both of these candidates have a lot of questions to answer on foreign policy, and I hope that tonight goes deeper than just, lines like we need to be friends with Russia or, just quick lines. But really, the American people deserve some depth in this discussion, right? Because a president of the United States has almost unchecked power on foreign policy.
And that's absolutely true, because he does have the military at his disposal. There are checks and balances in that, but not as many as you would think, especially in a time of emergency, right? That's
right.
That's how countries get themselves into trouble. And especially when countries elect, as in the 20th century, you saw this happen a number of times, a number of places. Countries get frustrated. They get bewildered by their own economic circumstances or whatever else is happening around them. Changes in technology and mass media and voting blocks that wouldn't normally vote begin to vote. You can see that in Europe in the 30s. You can see that here in the teens, all over the world in the teens, where you're getting these sort of eruptions of voters that you'd not seen before, and volatility in the voting base. Not predictable. This is happening all over the world. It's happening for a lot of reasons, but time is short on this. Here it is. Here is Trump. If Trump doesn't know what he's doing with foreign policy, it's disastrous for the United States. And Russia is the constant right now. Putin's not going anywhere.
No.
He's not going to allow for free elections.
And there was a great thing on 60 Minutes last night, too, about the Russians' increasing posture on nuclear weapons and how they've changed their basically doctrine to make nuclear weapons way more accessible in their use. And so this is something that's concerning. This, Putin's not out to become friends with America, and we just have misunderstood him. He wants to be the second polar part of this world, and that includes tearing apart our friends.
All right. All right, so you're not there tonight?
No.
No.
Shocking.
You're avoiding.
I will watch it, though. And I think there's a lot of good questions. Hillary has to obviously talk about her emails and her trust issue. She needs to mention, how she's going to be different than President Obama on ISIS and Syria, just like, Trump has answers. So it could be really a big letdown, or it could be really very explosive. It could be fun to watch.
Are you getting a ton of pushback from fellow Republicans on this?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I understand it. They very rightfully say, and it's a good point, hey, you got to back the Republican nominee. And I've said, look, I'm not going to go out and campaign against him. I just have some deep concerns, and I hope he alleviates those concerns. I haven't seen that happen yet. But yeah, I do get some pushback. But, you know, I wasn't elected because to be popular. I wasn't elected to, or that's not why I ran. I didn't run to, you know, to just do what I needed to do to get elected. I ran to restore America's strength, especially on the world globe. And, you know, sometimes it means standing up and taking tough points and taking tough positions, and I'm not going to shy away from it.
So could he still sway you, Congressman?
I mean, yeah, it's possible. I've always said I'm not a never Trump guy. That doesn't do any good. But, you know, time's getting short.
Mm-hmm. Time is getting short. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's. I have him at right now. My new map has him at 275 electoral. So
to me, close.
Yeah, he's right there.
Well, it just tightened up in Pennsylvania and Colorado. Those two states that she was ahead by quite a bit, even a week or 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, well, if he wins those, he wins by 300. It's the Obama map of 2020.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be. I think it's going to be a probably a pretty big victory. No matter, you know, either way, I think Trump can win. I think Hillary can win. I think if either one of them win, it's probably going to be a little bigger than a real close one. That's just my gut feeling. But my gut feeling's been wrong for a year, so who knows anymore?
I just want to know, as a sitting Republican congressman, will you be able to get me out of the labor camp when either one of them wins?
Great question.
No.
Can you change the menu if it's all potatoes? Or, I mean, like, Roe doesn't really like potatoes.
I don't really like them. I don't know what to do.
I'll slip a steak your way occasionally.
Ah, that'd be good.
Yeah. There you go.
All right, I could use a diet. Thank you, Congressman. Appreciate it. Goodbye.
Bye.